Progress.
Good evening. I call to order the Shoreline City Council regular meeting for Monday, November 3rd, 2025. Will you please join me in the flag salute? Thank you. Will the police clerk please call the roll?
Mayor Roberts.
Here.
Deputy Mayor Mort.
Present.
Councilmember Ramsdell.
Present.
Councilmember Robertson. Councilmember Adamasu.
Present.
Councilmember Poby.
Here.
Councilmember Scully.
The flag salute was much cooler tonight. Thank you all, and I am present.
Thank you. Do I have a motion?
Yes. I would like to excuse Councilmember Robertson for personnel reasons.
Second.
There's a motion and a second to excuse Councilmember Robertson for personal reasons. Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the motion passes. On behalf of the Shoreline City Council, I proclaim the month of November 2025 as Native American Heritage Month in the City of Shoreline and encourage all residents to learn more about ways to celebrate and support Native and Indigenous communities. For those of us who are here in person, please see the display from the Shoreline Historical Heritage Museum honoring Edie Lawyer Nelson, Native American at Duwamish Shoreline community member. So please check it out if you're here. I also have the pleasure of proclaiming Tuesday, November 11, 2025 as Veterans Appreciation Day in the City of Shoreline. And I'd like to invite Commander Charles Grand and Vice Commander John Brady of Star Sutherland Junior Post 227 to the podium to accept the proclamation. Whereas our nation was founded on the belief that all Americans are created equal and guaranteed the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And whereas our nation's veterans have sacrificed to preserve and protect our country and Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And whereas November 11th, 1919 was initially proclaimed as Armistice Day to honor our country's World War I veterans. And in order for a grateful nation to pay homage to veterans of all wars, on June 1st, 1954, President Eisenhower signed into law the renaming of Armistice Day to Veterans Day. And whereas the City of Shoreline recognizes the contributions of the men and women in the military who have served our country and who continue to serve their communities. And whereas on Tuesday, November 11, 2025, here at Shoreline City Hall, the Shoreline Veterans Association is hosting their annual Veterans Day celebration to honor local veterans. And now, therefore, I, Christopher Roberts, Mayor of the City of Shoreline, on behalf of the Shoreline City Council, do hereby proclaim November 11, 2025 as Veterans Appreciation Day in the City of Shoreline and urge all citizens to honor the sacrifices of the loyal and courageous veterans who have given so much for the cause of peace.
I appreciate the proclamation from the City of Shoreline. It's very important that we do continue working with the community, state, and nation. And it's always nice to have the community recognize that we are part of a viable force to do well here in the community. So thank you very much for your recognition. Can I borrow 2 minutes?
Yes.
So as the mayor pointed out, this was originally Veterans Day was originally referred to as Armistice Day. Armistice Day was, and a real fast lesson here. Armistice Day, the armistice for World War I, the cessation of hostilities in the European theater, was actually signed on 6 a.m. on the 11th of November in 1918. But due to the fact they had to get all the word out to all the troops, they decided to go ahead and have it actually occur on 11 o'clock. So that's where you get the traditional the 11th day, the 11th month, the 11th hour. So here's a bit of trivia. When was the last gun fired by the Americans? 10:59 to 59 seconds. It was done by the 11th Field Artillery, not getting any, you got to stretch that 11th all the way out there. And it was done by a howitzer named Calamity Jane. She's currently in repose in the West Point Museum. And of course, leave it to a lady to get the last word in some in a fight.
Thank you.
The next item is approval of tonight's agenda. If there are no objections or comments, the agenda is adopted by unanimous consent. Next on the agenda is the report of the city manager, Mr. Ellington.
Good evening, Council. I have just a couple of items to share this evening. First, there are two opportunities this week to visit our artist in residence, Anna Wetzel Arts, at the cottage. We invite you to visit her during her open studio hours this Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. and this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visit shorelinewa.gov/art to learn more about our artists in residence. Next, we have an upcoming Shoreline Walks event this weekend. Join us this Saturday, November 8th, for the Ridgecrest Neighborhood Walk. Learn more about Shoreline Walk and see upcoming events at shorelinewa.gov/shorelinewalks. And finally, I have just a couple of public reminders to share. The Planning Commission will meet on Thursday, November 6th in the City Council Chamber at 7 p.m. The next council meeting will be Monday, November 10th at 7 p.m. The Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Services Tree Board's next meeting is December 4th at 7 p.m. And for more information about these upcoming meetings, please visit shorelinewa.gov/calendar. And that concludes the City Manager's report.
Thank you. Are there any council reports this evening? Councilmember Scully.
Thank you. I attended the 90th anniversary celebration of the Filipino community of Seattle. It was literally over 1,000 people. It's a fantastic event. And it's always interesting to me to reach out to some of the communities that have kept their ethnic identities and yet still are part of us. And I would encourage all of you to do the same.
Thank you. Councilmember Adamasu.
Thank you, Mayor. I attended the soft opening of a new small business in East Shoreline called Salvation Arts Collective. In their own words, explore art by local makers with a special focus on pieces created from reclaimed and upcycled materials. I prefer to buy items that are upcycled. They're gentler on the earth. The shop is located on a corner in a former home. It felt like a space for community to gather there. It was very singular. I advocate for more small businesses like this in Shoreline. Thank you to Nate Dom for working with this owner.
Thank you. Any further council reports this evening? No, okay. Okay, Deputy Mayor Mark.
Thank you. We're continuing to work on the affordability event that has happening for electeds on November 14th. The issue is trying to understand utility rates, why they're going up so fast, and what we can do about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is public comment. This is the portion of the meeting where members of the public may address the City Council on agenda items or any other matter pertaining to the city business for 3 minutes or less, depending on the number of people wishing to speak. And how many people are signed up this evening?
I have 4 in-person speakers and 1 online speaker for general comment.
Okay. I also note that we do have 2 public hearings this evening, one for ordinance number 1041, the property tax levy, and one for ordinance number 1040, the 2025 to 2026 mid-biennial budget amendment. Public testimony on those topics will be accepted after the staff report. Since we do have 4 people for general public comment here in person, we'll start with them and then go to the online speaker. So when your name is called, please come to the podium. Begin your testimony with your name and city of residence, please.
Our first speaker is Virgilio Goes.
And if you could, actually, if all 4, can you call all 4?
Yeah. Next will be Mary Ellen Stone, then Q Winnick, and then Matthew DeAngelis.
Okay, welcome.
Good evening. My name is Virgilio Goze, and I am a resident here in Shoreline, Washington. I am also a National Association of Letter Carriers shop steward and a city letter carrier for Wallingford Station for the United States Postal Service. I just wanted to thank Mayor Chris Roberts for signing this proclamation, celebrating the 250th anniversary of the United States Postal Service and going on the record against privatization of the Postal Service. This was spurred by the recent attempts by the Trump administration to try and move us to the Commerce Department, which resulted in our union, the National Association of Letter Carriers, having its one of its largest mobilizations back in March 23rd against postal privatization, and trying and encouraging local governments and state governments to sign proclamations such as this was spearheaded by the sister union of my union, the American Postal Workers Union, to coincide with the 250th anniversary of the Postal Service. The Postal Service provides affordable service to all Americans. It has a universal service obligation, and it delivers to every address in the United States. It provides, middle-class jobs, and, is one of the largest employers of veterans in the country. So it's very important to support the Postal Service during these trying times, and attempts to privatize it should be pushed back against. There is House Resolution 70 right now in Congress that is being proposed, and I would encourage members of the public to please support that legislation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, Mary Ellen Stone, resident of Richmond Beach. Nice to be here. I'm also wanting to thank you for signing the proclamation, Mayor. And just as a reminder, too, this came out of Indivisible. I'm here also representing Shoreline Indivisible. Some of our other members are here. And I think it takes courage when we see institutions that we depend on, and maybe they need improvement, but we depend on them being systematically attacked to stand up. And so I appreciate the mayor and by default the council and the city saying this is an important thing for us. So thank you for speaking up. Thank you for standing up, and I know there are going to be more opportunities to do this.
Thank you.
Q Winnick.
Yeah, it's Ken Winnick, and resident of Shoreline. Yes, I'm here to speak about what I believe is going to be proposed tonight, a motion to support a semi-quincentennial spoken word series in Shoreline in 2026. So I just thought I'd present a little bit of information about it. So we're requesting $3,000 in 2026 to partner with Shoreline Community College to produce a U.S. 250th semi-quincentennial spoken word series. The college is also contributing to this event. The program will be entitled America at 250, A Republic If We Can Keep It. The title is based on the famous words spoken by Benjamin Franklin in 1787 as he emerged from the U.S. Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia. He was asked by a bystander, "Well, doctor, what have we got, a monarchy or a republic?" Franklin famously responded, "A republic if we can keep it."
Franklin's statement captures the fragile nature of democratic governance and the responsibility citizens bear in sustaining it. The proposed program that we're going to see tonight, or vote on here, I guess, pretty soon, will feature historians and storytellers who will relate stories of people in the Northwest who demonstrated the same type of revolutionary spirit exhibited by our founders, a spirit rooted in political freedom, self-determination, individual liberty, democratic ideals, and the courage to change the status quo. We'll be developing a six-part series for this event, and we have an advisory board put together that includes members from the City of Shoreline, the Wing Luke Museum, Washington State Historical Society, Shoreline Community College, Shoreline Historical Museum, and the Black Heritage Society. So I would just encourage the council to approve this when it comes up for a vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, Matthew DeAngelis, resident in Meridian Park. Apologies if this should be an agenda item comment, but just wanted to speak in favor of a proposed budget item to improve some land that I understand is owned by Seattle City Light near the North City, near the North Light Rail Station, and to create kind of like a community and food truck hub, things like that. Selfishly, I use the light rail a lot. I use it to commute. I also use it to go into the city a lot. And I think we actually have one of the nicest light rail stations. Maybe we have the nicest light rail station in Seattle, to be honest, especially in the spring when the flowers are blooming. But then you leave the light rail station, and it's a real bummer that we have this, like, absolutely beautiful. I don't know if this is, you know, how much input Shoreline or the council had on that and how much input was Sound Transit's, but it's a shame that you leave this beautiful light rail station and there's nothing to walk to. I think it could be a fantastic driver of business in North City and in Shoreline in general to have some kind of incubator there that small businesses can open up food trucks and other little shops, maybe on their way to opening a full brick and mortar. I think everyone here has heard how much the entire community wants more small businesses in Shoreline, how we don't have enough commercial space. I just think this is a really awesome way to take the light rail that the taxpayers have fronted billions of dollars for, literally, and then do something with that light rail, namely get people into Shoreline to spend their money, and also to create a much better community space for North City, Meridian Park, all the neighborhoods around there. So anyway, thank you for your time, and thanks for considering budget items like that.
Thank you. And we have one person online.
Yes, our online speaker is Amanda Lopez Castanon. I don't see her in my list. If you could raise your hand in Zoom, I can allow you to speak.
Okay. Well, Amanda can always send in her comments to us via email, so we'll definitely want to hear from her. Those are the people who have signed up to speak. Does anyone else in the audience like to address the council at this time? If so, please come to the podium. Thank you. We will, seeing no one come to the podium, we'll close public comment. The next item is approval of the consent calendar. Is there a motion?
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
The consent calendar has been moved and seconded. Will the clerk please conduct a vote?
Mayor Roberts.
Aye.
Councilmember Poby.
Aye.
Deputy Mayor Mork.
Aye.
Councilmember Adamasu.
Aye.
Councilmember Scully.
Aye.
Councilmember Ramsdell.
Aye.
That motion passes 6-0. The next item on the agenda is a public hearing and discussion on ordinance number 1041, the 2026 property tax levy. And we do have a staff report. The agenda for the public hearing is going to be a staff presentation, followed by public testimony, and then council discussion.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good evening. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Thank you for listening to our presentation this evening regarding the budget. My name is Joe Brandstetter. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the city, and I'm joined by Christy Hopkins, our Budget and Tax Manager. We have several budget-related items on the agenda for you tonight. First, we'll begin with a financial update. This will provide a snapshot of revenue, expenditures, and key trends heading in towards the end of the year. The second item we will discuss is our proposed 2026 property tax levies. This will be followed by council discussion and a public hearing. Thirdly, we will close with a high-level overview of our mid-biennial budget review. We will also touch on proposed updates to the city's fee schedule. This section will also include council discussion and a public hearing. And on the next steps, we will also be reviewing key dates upcoming. Before I turn it over to Christy, I just want to acknowledge her and her budget staff who have put tons of time and hours into this and bringing you some important budget information tonight. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Christy.
Thank you. Good evening. So first, we'll start with a financial update on the overview of the general fund and expenditures, and preliminary numbers are through the third quarter. The third quarter is not yet finalized, but most revenue and expenditures have been recorded, with the exception of those transfers in and out. For revenue, we are about 64% of our budget and about $73,000 more than last year. And for expenditures, you can see we are about 60% of our budget. So for the general fund, our two largest funding sources are property tax and sales tax. Looking at property tax, we are about 54% of our collections of the allowable levy, which is similar to last year. Majority of collections happen in April and October. Moving on to sales tax, we are about 5.3% less than last year. We had budgeted a 6.5% decrease, so we're actually slightly above our forecast. You can see the largest driver of this decrease is in that construction sales tax. We are a decrease of 19%. We will continue to monitor this revenue source closely, and if we see a significant decline, we will report to the city manager and city council. So next, looking at the revenue, recreation revenue for the third quarter, we are around 7% higher in general recreation revenue and less than 1% higher in the facility rental revenue from last year. Looking at the development revenue, you can see that we are already about 11.5% greater than our budget. As discussed in the staff report, and looking at the 2025 permits applied and issued, you can really see a drop in those projects with those higher evaluations, which led us to adjust our revenue estimates down for 2026. This is also detailed in the staff report. Moving on, looking at B&O tax, we are around 260 less than last year, but this is due to around $220,000 in back taxes we received in 24. So we believe that we are on track to meet our budget for the year. Looking at gambling tax, we are around 4% less than last year. We have reduced our budget for our gambling tax and our mid-buy true-ups. Then looking at utility tax, franchise fees, and contract revenue, we are mostly on track with our budget. We have increases and decreases in each of the categories with a net ongoing increase of $89,000 to the budget, and this is also detailed in our staff report. So moving on to real estate excise tax, which is split 50-50 between GenCap and RoadsCap. You can see currently we are 1.4% greater than last year and currently around 91% of our budget. We had one large sale that made about 12.5% of our budget, so staff will continue to monitor this revenue source and its impact on GenCap and RoadsCap. So moving on to property taxes for 2026, which is Ordinance 1041, Shoreline voters approved a levy lid lift in 2022, which allows our property tax to grow by CPI, which was 2.683% for 2026. Plus, we get an increase from new construction and any refunds. We are estimating our property tax for 2026 to be around 25.8 to 25.9 million, which includes new construction refunds, an estimated levy rate of $1.49. In addition, Shoreline voters approved an excess levy for parks improvement, which is about 2.95 million for 2026. And now I pass back to council for public hearing discussion and comment.
Thank you. I wish to open the public hearing. Public testimony is limited to 3 minutes per person testifying. If you'd like to testify, I don't think anyone signed up.
Not for this item.
But if anyone would like to testify, please come to the podium and begin your testimony with your name and city of residence. And if you're online, please raise your hand and we will call on you. If you'd like, just come up to the podium. Name, yes.
My name is John Brady. As a resident, I'm not a legionnaire. This is something that got me. When I have these propositions come before and I say, okay, it's gonna be X amount of dollars per annual, per $1,000 of estimated value of the land or the property. That's fine if I have a single house. I live in an apartment complex. What's that translate to in dog years? I have no idea because I can't figure out the valuation of some of the homes, like say of the apartments, let's say the current, or some of the ones like the 192nd, which was just put in. We live right across from that. It's been there for a while. So how do we figure out when we have these programs come before us and we're asked to pay for them, how does that relate to us as far as what's it going to be for rent? Because a lot of the people, that especially in our building, are on fixed income. So by adding more into it, it might benefit some people, but not necessarily them, but they're going to be hit by the valuation of the property. And how is that determined for renters? Just discuss it however you'd like.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the council at this time? And no one online. So seeing none, we will close the public hearing and open council discussion. Councilor Scully.
Thank you, and thank you for that. And I want to thank you in a moment for an additional thing, but this is all bad news, right? I mean, everything is basically down, and it's less bad news for us than it is for most jurisdictions because we plan very conservatively. And I appreciate the fact that you predicted a 6% drop and we only had a 2.5 or whatever it was, so that's great. But the number that worries me is the construction revenue and the REIT revenue. It's like a meal in an anaconda. We've got a bunch of projects working their way through the system. It looks like Shoreline is booming, but we're not getting new permit applications, right? And that's because Canada is shut off to us, so we're not getting cheap timber, we're not getting all these things. Tariffs have consequences, and we're going to start feeling them in the years to come. So I don't have a question on that, just a thank you for continuing to take account of that and realize that this is not the end of it. My two questions are, all these numbers make sense to me in the abstract, but I'm wondering if we adopt all the changes that you've recommended, what is the impact in terms of property tax on an individual single-family homeowner? And then my second question comes from the public comment. How do you sort that out to get to what's the likely increase in rent based upon the tax increases that we're proposing? And I know how smart you are, so I don't hesitate to spring that. And if the answer is, we'll get back to you, I understand.
We will have to do some work on that, but it's really ultimately up to the tenant, the landlord, of how they want to pass those costs on to the tenants. That they are, they're going to pass those costs on. It's hard to get that breakdown of the various units within the building, but that's something we could take a look at and try to get some more information on. But to the comment earlier from Mr. Brady, it's a lot easier to calculate it for a homeowner than it is someone who is renting in an apartment, for example.
As our demographics change, I think maybe that's a statistic we ought to try and put out there with all the caveats associated with it. But we do only present for homeowners, and it is difficult as a voter who rents to make that decision. And the second question is, what's the change from 2025 to 2026 in terms of what we're all going to be seeing on our property tax bills?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's hard to tell because, right, you're looking at every dollar property tax, you know, for City of Shoreline, it's only about 17%. So you have, like, all of the other, King County state schools and all that. To give you the exact, like, dollar breakdown, like, I'd have to get back to you on that.
If we can do that on these presentations, and again, that comment is very well taken, but if we can do it as we've always done it, like if we do all this with all these changes, most of which are baked in, they're part of the program we've got, but if we can say, you know, for a $500,000 valued home,
sure,
here's 2025, here's 2026, just so we get a perspective on sort of what the actual impact is going to be on individuals, it'd be really helpful. Thank you.
Yep.
Any further discussion? I see no further discussion. At this point, are we fine with putting this on consent? Okay. And this will come back to us in a few weeks on the consent calendar. Okay.
Okay, so I will start the mid-biennial review with the 2020 fee schedule overview. So Ordinance 1042 is for the 2026 impact fees for transportation, park, and fire. Transportation and park fee schedules increased by the Seattle Construction Cost Index, which was a negative 1.64% for 2026. Next, we have Resolution 548 for 2026 fees. These fee schedules generally increase by June to June CPI, which was 2.683%, but some schedules are tied to other indices. So all fee schedules are attached to the staff report, and deletions are shown as strike-throughs, and additions are bolded and underlined. We wanted to highlight two key changes. One is the inclusion of co-living houses as a new land use in the impact fees. Planning and Community Development Department is scheduled to discuss these changes to the development regulations with Council on November 10th. The other change is the 4% technology fee to the Planning and Community Development fee schedule to help support permitting systems and online services. Details are outlined in the staff report. The 4% fee is comparable to other area cities, which is generally in the 3-5% range. So next is those salary and benefit considerations. So salary range placement tables are attached to the staff report and attachment A, exhibit A, B, and C. The cost of living adjustment is 2.683%, which is the Seattle June to June CPI. Recommended title changes and changes in range placement from salary survey is included in the range placement tables and are indicated with strike-throughs and red font.
Excuse me. One of the areas of increasing costs that we want to highlight is public safety and criminal justice. This chart illustrates how our budget for these services has grown from 2020 to 2026. The largest driver of this increase is our police services contract with King County Sheriff's Office. The actual expenditures for police can fluctuate year to year, largely due to vacancies and workload. The budgeted amounts give a more accurate picture of long-term growth, especially as Shoreline's vacancies have decreased. Looking ahead, we expect police costs to continue to rise faster than CPI in the foreseeable future. As a result of that, public safety will continue to make up a growing share of our general fund expenditures. For 25-26 biennium, these costs represent approximately 32% of the overall operating budget. And we are seeing costs increase. For example, in 2027, we're planning for an additional $200,000 in probation services costs that had previously been paid for by King County that is being passed on to us.
Yeah. in the staff report, budget amendment requests were submitted as a result of our mid-biennial review. This includes personnel requests of 2.367 FTEs, so one ongoing wastewater position, and 1.367 of limited-term positions. There's also a position change of a limited term to an ongoing, which had no effect to the FTE count for 2026, but will have an ongoing budgetary impact. There were a number of emerging issues that were not known at the time of the biennial budget or last budget amendment. A number of grants were received that are now being budgeted for. We have those mid-bi true-ups of those costs and revenue. And then lastly, a capital update after a review of our capital plan. So this graph represents the city's 10-year financial forecast. This includes those ongoing mid-bi budget requests, as well as an update to our current estimates and revenue and expenditures. So the red solid line represents those pre-mid-bi requests, and then the red dotted line is those mid-bi requests. And the black line represents our latest estimates and revenue. The annual gap you see in 2025 and 2026 is just for those one-time requests that were approved during the biennial budget and the last budget amendment. Looking at the annual surplus line, you can see that we are balanced through 2029 with a deficit starting in 2030. This does not anticipate the levy lid lift in 2029. So this slide shows that unassigned, undesignated ending fund balance, starting with the ending 2024 fund balance, taking those required reserves, less use of fund balance for one time during the biennial and prior budget amendment, less those funds already set aside for one-time projects, less the $2.6 million for potential mid-bi budget amendments. I think the laptop just died.
Bear with us here.
I propose charades.
Oh, there we go. Okay, where was I? The $2.6 million in mid-bi budget amendments. We also set aside $500,000 for potential cost overruns on the 145th Street project. After all these, we anticipate our ending fund balance to be $16.254 million. So next, we'll pass it back to council for a public hearing.
Thank you very much. I now wish to open the public hearing. Public testimony is limited to 3 minutes per person testifying. And I do not believe anyone signed up for this.
I have two online speakers.
You have two online speakers, okay. We'll start with the online speakers, and then if anyone in the audience like to address the council on this in this public hearing, we will go with for that. So we have two people online.
So our first public speaker is Gabriel Sneed.
Hi, my name is Gabriel Sneed and I am a resident of Shoreline. I live in Meridian Park. I just wanted to comment on the Rotary Park improvements that are in the biennial budget updates. So I think the activation of the space adjacent to Rotary Park is a great opportunity to provide space for local small businesses as they get started and help meet the demand for community space in Shoreline. I know that plenty of my coworkers and friends and I are always looking for places in Shoreline that we can have events or spend time or spend money. So I think that's a really great use of funds to benefit us, you know, in multiple directions. It'd be great to have stuff near the light rail. Very selfishly think it would be an awesome space, but I also think it would give us in Shoreline some really amazing accessible community space, and I know that that's something that came up in all the surveys for the comprehensive plan. A lot of people said they wanted nearby businesses, local businesses, and walkable everything. So the light rail station is a really good, you know, location to build around, and I think that would be a great use of funds. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Matt Snyder.
Welcome.
Hi, y'all.
We heard you for a second, Matt.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Good. Sorry about that. So my name's Matt Snyder. I live in Shoreline in the Hillwood neighborhood. I'm standard issue suburban dad. I'm part of the PTSA. I like to go ride my bike and hang out in Shoreline. And I think that event space such as that that the previous speaker just touched on, that's part of the capital improvement plan, would just be super awesome for Shoreline. You know, we could host public events like someone in the general comment mentioned, a food truck gathering, you know, like some sort of night market like that would be really cool. We could have like artisan markets, you know, that promote the creative economy in Shoreline. You know, maybe even we could have a Shoreline local music festival one day. How cool would that be? And how much would that get people into the idea of like Shoreline as a fun, cool, creative city? And, you know, obviously throwing events like that would promote small businesses in Shoreline who could showcase their products, art, food, or whatever they're making or creating. You know, and it's a good spot because it's be easy to bike there through like neighborhoods, and you can even get part of the way on the interurban and then cross over the freeway over to that spot. You could also take public transit, you know, from the light rail from outside of Shoreline. And so I think it'll just bring people in Shoreline together to do cool things, and also bring people from outside of Shoreline into our city to see what a fun and vibrant place it is. And also, you know, as the population of Shoreline has been growing, it seems to me, you know, due in large part to all these high-rise apartment buildings going up, a lot of those, you know, if you're a renter, you know, you're not committed to the home that you've bought in Shoreline. And so I think retaining those new families and individual renters in Shoreline by providing them with cool spaces like this that could be used to throw like any sort of activity, it's a huge positive. And so it'd be worth every dime spent on this so that we can just make Shoreline a more fun and cool place to live. Thanks.
Thank you. Those are the people who signed up online. Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to address the? If you can, come to the podium, state your name and city of residence, please. Welcome.
Well, I feel like
that. Can you start with your name and city of residence?
Oh yeah, I'm Ben Chapman, and I live on Ashworth down there, and I feel like that area would be a good place to have all that stuff, like they said. And maybe like a garden or something, so people could go out there and hang out and talk to each other and make new connections in the community.
Thank you. Yeah. Is there anyone else who'd like to address the council at this time? Again.
My name is John Brady, and again, operating as a citizen here. I had a question in regards to the budget for, I want to say law enforcement, maybe. I noticed they progressively went up from like 2022 to 2020 up to 2026, continually going up. I believe the largest driver of the increase is due to probationary operations being seized by King County and handing it back to Shoreline. Am I correct on that?
The largest driver of our public safety is the police contract with King County. Separate from that, we are seeing an increase in probation services in 2027, so that wouldn't be reflected in that slide.
Okay, and the reason I say that, you know, I was looking too, is it seems like we have a lot of new development in the shoreline, which would be increasing the population. Between those two items, what are we looking to do in the future to mitigate the continued increase of our public service costs? And is public service considered also fire?
No.
So it's just guys with guns. Just checking. So anyway, I'm just making sure that, you know, what is being done to, you know, help mitigate the upward trend. And I'll let you guys discuss that too.
Thank you. Any further comments tonight? Okay, we'll close the public hearing. This item will come back to us in a couple of weeks, and so there's more opportunities to communicate to the council about the topics we discussed today or anything in the budget over the next couple of weeks. So I now turn to my colleagues to talk about the budget. Any thoughts of amendments or other issues that you'd like to address? Yeah, Councilmember Renzo.
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, I just it's a very impressive staff report. A couple of things I'd just like to highlight that I'm very much in support of. One was the, I'm supporting the full-time performance management position. You know, I think, you know, performance management is just kind of a fundamental element of good stewardship by city government. And I'm just so happy to know that program has started and that now you're asking for a full-time position. Hopefully that will continue to be permanent. Okay, great. And also, so in support of the grant administrator extension, basically that provides value, especially considering kind of the evolving kind of grant landscape with God knows what's going to be happening in the next year or two under this current federal administration. So I know that's something that has less many very, very concerned. The website accessibility, I'm really hoping that that'll be more user friendly. When I look at that website, I think if you're an elder person who has some challenges with that, the small font on our website, I think that's an issue for some older readers. So if we could kind of look at, looking at that website to make it a little bit more friendly for kind of those elderly tired eyes, that would be, I think, really helpful for many of our citizens, since we have a lot of aging citizens in our city. I was happy to see the Spartan Recreational HVAC upgrade. I know, speaking to the director of the senior center, that there was lots of suffering happening in the summer with the air conditioning kind of dying and making it difficult for our staff and for participants to kind of enjoy that facility. I do have a question regarding, I noticed that I'm very much in favor of the winter light project. I did notice that it came up twice in the staff report. One was for $35,000, another one for $267,400. And some of that would be funded by park impact fees. And so I'm wondering, is that the money that was taken for the park impact fees, is that going to be diverted from other projects in order to cover the cost of that winter light project? That's one of the things. Or is that are other projects, park projects in the city, at the same level of funding that we had, let's say, a year ago? Thank you.
Yeah, I believe that like each project is funded at different levels from park impact fees. That was just for the capital portion of this, and doing the physical electrical work on the park. So that's where the park impact fees come from. Yeah.
Thank you.
Councilmember Scully.
Sorry, I shook my head and then I realized I did have something to say. What would be useful for me and more for the folks who sort of weigh in at some point in the process, when we talk about the council amendments, there's additional money there, but what it doesn't show on the graphic is sort of where that comes from. And my understanding from the 10-year financial sustainability model is that we've got a delta starting in 2027 where we're actually bringing in more than we spend. And if we plan it out to 2030, which is when we next look at the levy lift, right? Yeah.
2029.
I knew there was a mistake. If you look at 2029, we're revenue neutral, regardless of whether we have the amendments or not. So what I want to know is sort of how much money is there in that gap. So if we add things now, how much is left for next year? So what's the cost given the slight gap we have? And I don't know how to present that graphically, but I'm hoping you folks can figure it out. Just because in the abstract, like, why wouldn't we spend $6,000 on a semi-quincentennial lecture series? But the question is, how much is left if we want to do something next year, right? So that's right.
Yeah, so we have kind of like our table that shows our one time. So we really separate out money we have for one time versus ongoing.
Yeah.
So any ongoing expenditures we make sure is covered by ongoing revenue. So that $16 million, right, is what we have for one times.
So let's include that graphic because it's not unlimited, right? We can't do everything. At some point we do tap out and we're nowhere near that. And I just want a graphic showing that these decisions, these fairly small items, aren't going to increase property taxes. They're not going to break the bank. It's a finite amount, but we're within it. And then my second is just a comment. It's the police contract. I mean, it's not probation. And that's because we've been fighting for, you know, as long as I've been on council, 10 years, to get adequate staffing. We're still not at 100%. The sheriff's office has a brand new contract which gives incoming police officers a lot more money, which we had to do because we weren't able to get bodies, qualified bodies in uniforms. So that's the increase. And that is hopefully going to stabilize, but that's just something we've had to accept because we need good police and we need enough police, and it's just costing more and more each year.
Thank you. Councilmember Adamasu.
Bear with me. I have three questions. First, I want to applaud Mr. Joe Brandstetter and Ms. Christy Hopkins for the cautious approach to maintain the city in a healthy, stable financial position with a AA+ bond rating. Many kudos. So thank you. So my first question is, if council approves all staff recommended amendments, how much money is left over for the council member potential amendments that are on the screen? Like, I'm not sure what, how much money we're looking at.
Yeah, I think my advice is we want to be very cautious when we look at the one of the slides that has the fund balance at the $16.2 million.
Can you go back to that slide?
Yeah, I'm sorry. The slide that has the fund balance of $16.2 million. We want to be as close to $16 million as we can, and the more conservative we are now, to Councilmember Scully's point, the fewer tougher decisions we're gonna have to make down the road. So it's tough to put a specific number on this, but I would just urge caution with council amendments. Ultimately, it's your call, but the closer we are to that $16 million number, the better off we'll be.
Thank you. Second question, regarding the cost increases in the police contract. Do we know how much of the increase in the staff report said much of the increase was in dispatched calls for service? So how much of those dispatched calls for service were overtime pay due to vacancies, et cetera?
So the dispatch call for service, so it's we get kind of like a workload balance. We get a portion of those dispatch calls, and because our number kind of stayed the same and other cities went down, we proportionally got charged more. So our dispatch calls didn't go up. They kind of remained the same, but it's because it's a cost sharing with other cities, and so that's how we ended up. So that was like 200, I think, around 250,000 of our 400.
Pretty significant.
Yeah.
The sheriff does give us a breakdown of those additional workload costs. So to Christy's point, we were pretty flat, but everyone else is decreased. Okay.
Thank you. My last question, we had a second major cloud provider outage in less than 2 weeks, highlighting the instability of cloud services. Regarding the Springbrook cloud migration request for funds, is there any concern for the cloud going down and what we would do during interruption? Does our cloud vendor have backup procedures? And I realize this probably isn't a funding thing, but do you have anything to say about the cloud funding request?
Any migration to the cloud that we're doing, we're making sure that the cloud is up to industry standards and we wouldn't compromise our data. So we do have a lot of our network services on the cloud currently. And the industry trend is to move more towards cloud. It's more secure, and we get the data off-premises. So we absolutely are cautious about the data that we're putting on the cloud and the vendor that we're using to make sure they're a secure secure vendor.
Thank you.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Mark.
Thank you. Appreciate all the time and effort you put into your presentation. As you can imagine, we are very lucky that our city has done as well as compared to our neighbors, and we are very interested in keeping our city safe from the difficulties that some of our neighboring cities need to come in. I've been spending an awful lot of time trying to change the trajectory of all these increases that are so much higher than the CPIU. Utilities is one of them. I'm really concerned on wastewater and stormwater costs, where the city is, I'm unclear on if costs are being moved to those utilities from the general city. That the new wastewater position, that, you know, there's the change that you talked about, is that money coming from the general fund or from the wastewater utility?
That's coming from the wastewater utility, yes.
So it's going to increase the rates?
No, it will not, because that cost is fully in their current rate model. So the current rate model, that cost fits into. So the current wastewater fees will increase based on the wastewater rate study that was already done.
Okay.
Yes.
So this will not impact that?
No. It will be whatever they have currently have in their rate study.
Thank you. That is really helpful. I'm wondering about insurance. So there was two accidents, and it didn't seem to reflect that we got any insurance payments. Does the city not, how come we're having to pay for people running into us?
Oh, we did get a settlement on the one for the individual who ran into our vehicle or our total parks vehicle. We did get a payout of that. The budget request is to replace it with a larger vehicle, to do that. Our insurance costs are increasing. We use WCIA. That's our liability insurance is up significantly. A lot of that's just market driven. So it's something that we continue to monitor, but it's just kind of the reality of the reinsurance business right now, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The costs get passed on to us.
Are you impacted with climate change on insurance increases? So the property damage and all that kind of
stuff. It's absolutely baked in there. They don't line item it out for us, but yeah, we're paying for that.
Yeah, they've been telling us for years it was going to increase faster than the rate of inflation, and yes, that is absolutely true. And that was one of my questions. The city maintenance facility cost that's gone up, is some of that money being paid for by wastewater and stormwater, or? So what is kind of the impact of rates of that?
That's also already included in their rate study, so there wouldn't be any change in costs from that. But yes, the budget amendment is fully funded by surface water and wastewater. We already have general fund dollars appropriated for this biennium for the maintenance facility.
So I'm just trying to understand, if it's already in there, why do you have to ask for more?
Well, it's right timing of budget. So the wastewater rate study, I believe, is, I can't recall how many years it's for, but as like timing changes, right, of when stuff is budgeted.
Okay.
Yeah, the rates are set and we kind of slide different components in there as needed.
It's the rates are definitely going up, and so I'm very concerned that the city of Shoreline does everything we can to not put costs into that on top of what's happening in the county level. The question I had about the Spartan HVAC system, does that building belongs to the school district, does it not?
It does, yes.
So do they contribute to this, or is...
They will not. We will provide the HVAC for that facility.
So how many years are we anticipating? What's the life cycle expected for this HVAC improvement?
The life expectancy of the HVAC, or how long are we going to be in that facility?
Yeah, yes.
So I know that there's been conversations that have been had with the school district, or I think there's been some commitments that we feel comfortable that this improvement will last the length of time that we'll be in that facility.
So most HVAC is 20 years, so.
Well, maybe half that.
Okay, there we go. And then the last question I had, and my apologies for this, is on your beautiful blue slide that you don't have here, where it's showing the general fund unassigned and undesignated ending fund balance. I'm really worried about the 148th, half the 0.5 million that you put in for the cost overruns. Is that realistic?
That is a realistic number. We've worked with our public works staff on that. It's possible it could be higher. But this gives us the base to set aside some money now, and then if we need additional funds, we would absolutely be coming back to you through the budget process next year.
Okay. Can you describe a little bit about how, so these, one of the things, for instance, was delays, and we needed to pay because other people delayed us. So we had to pay for the easements for longer. Again, I'm looking to try to find other people to shift some of this funds to. Are there any possibilities for when somebody else causes a problem to have them pay a portion?
We're going to look at every opportunity. We're looking at our partners. This is in constant flux as we continue to communicate with WashDOT, with other agencies, and so we're hoping that this actually turns out to be less, but we're being realistic in identifying this, but as Joe indicated, it could be more, and so we're going to keep an eye on it, but our hope is that we can work with our partners for them to provide a proportionate share of the cost.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. In the county utility front, the costs are going up hugely, and part of it is that there's so much construction for public works all at the same time. So I was worried that some of that may be impacting this. Thank you, Mr. Ellington, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Councilmember Pubby.
Thank you, Mayor. Great work. The staff report is very well detailed, and so thank you for everything in there. Just to pick back on where Deputy Mayor left off. My understanding is the surface water and wastewater runs its own enterprise fund.
Yes.
And so the funds are already accumulated in that, and that's where you're expending from.
Yes.
I think that would have helped clear things up. Yeah. So. All right. My main question is 4% technology fee. I'm excited about the enhancement, the technology portal enhancement, I mean the online portal enhancement, and I'm looking at the 85,000, is that annual cost that's gonna come with it?
That's the estimate, yeah.
The estimate, 4%, okay. So a scenario where permitting process or the applications and coming in, how do we intend to sustain the portal? Because the 4% is based on the cost of a particular permit, is that correct?
Yeah, it'd be 4% a technology fee on the specific permits. We're anticipating that that 4% would cover the ongoing costs. And we've worked with, I've been on the committee with our community development team and public works team to make sure that we're getting cost recovery on that. So anything that we take above that, if we're fortunate, is going to stay in that same sub fund for additional technology improvements. So it's not going to get commingled into other areas of the budget. It's specifically for the permitting software.
Okay,
so this is related to it.
All right, okay, so this will specifically support just a permitting portal. Okay, I appreciate the efficiency and the effectiveness approach that you've taken to this. Lastly, I want to talk about the equipment purchases, or the mowers, the plow, all the things you're buying. I'm just wondering how much of this is coming from the replacement reserve for these vehicles specifically?
I don't know specifically, but we have a table in there that shows like how much is coming from the equipment reserve fund. I'd have to look at that.
Okay.
It's buried deep in the staff report.
If it's in there, I might have missed it because I was wondering. But if it's in there, beautiful. That's all I was looking for. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a few questions. First, I'm really excited that we'll, on November 15th, we're going to flip the switch on our winter lights display. I think just getting to council today, it was dark and dreary, and having something really fun in the town center is going to be really exciting for our community. I noticed that in this year's budget, we are talking about one-time funding for the display, and I believe most of that is for storage and for other things of that. I believe Nate is on also, so he may be able to answer this, but what kind of work are we doing and to try to sort of help find sponsorships or other ways to cover the costs of, because without finding additional costs, I believe we'll have this one-time funding will become sort of an annual cost to the city. So I'm wondering what kind of efforts that we're doing to try to find sponsorships for that.
Nate has done a tremendous job in working with friends of Shorelight to actually look for sponsorships. And I see Nate is on there, but he has been very effective in formulating a group of folks that are going out and looking for sponsorships. And we're hoping that that could be an ongoing thing, but I'll let Nate add to that.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the question. We do have a great group of volunteers, six now, I think, folks that are committed to helping us with that outreach. We have a list of, I think, about 100 now businesses and organizations that we've made contact with, and those negotiations. It's tough to raise money for something no one's ever seen before. So we're definitely hopeful we'll get some revenue that'll help support it in this year. But we do anticipate, and the guidance we've received from our peers who do similar events, certainly can and should be supported by external and the business community, external parties, but that takes time, and is more successful in that second year. And so that's definitely, the strategy we have chosen and have committed to, and as Bristol mentioned, even has a name, Friends of Shoreline, that we hope will be able to continue to carry it on and carry it forward, so that the city's initial upfront investment with one-time dollars truly are exactly that, and that the recurring revenue needed annually to put it back up again every year, we hope is something that we can support with those outside dollars from those benefiting parties of businesses in the community, that we hope will see a big bump in all the visitors that will be coming to the area. Approximately 10,000 over the course of the season is what we're expecting. We have over 280 have expressed interest on the Facebook event for the launch event, which you mentioned on November 15th. So very excited about that. And I think it is a strategy that holds promise. But yeah, as I said before, it'll be more likely to bear fruit in years two and beyond.
Thank you. It was brought up in public comment about sort of public safety and how that is a large driver. Not only is it a large driver of our budget, but the costs are increasing. Do we have a sense of how King County is going, how the King County Council is going to budget and what they're going to do with the public safety sales tax that they adopted? Do we have a sense of what they're going to do with that? And more importantly, do you think is going to help sort of reduce or at least relieve some of the pressure on the city's budget?
That they're not utilizing that money to provide new services. It's to shore up their budgetary shortfall. And it is not anticipated that contract cities will see any benefit from that. What they've indicated is that jurisdictions have the ability to also ask for and vote for their own sales tax increase. So no, we do not anticipate any benefit from that.
Okay, thank you. The next question I have is, one of the other big cost drivers on our budget is inflation around road maintenance and road construction, as asphalt and other prices are increasing by a lot. What are some options that we have as a council to help to continue to maintain and upkeep our streets and sidewalks?
You know, that's a great question. Is Trish, our public works director, on there? She can probably speak to more of the strategies related to pavement and road maintenance than we can. But yeah, it's definitely an area where we're seeing increased costs on a regular basis. So,
is she here? Or?
I thought she. Online. Yeah, Trish, could you answer that question?
Yes, just trying to get my video to turn on.
Thanks.
While I do that, so we do have some council options. I apologize that my lighting's so terrible today. We do have some options. As an example, council does have an additional $10 in vehicle license fee that is council can approve. Right now we are billing $40 per vehicle that is split between sidewalk rehab and pavement preservation, and you can go to $50 per vehicle without going to the voters. So that is the primary tool that I'm left aware of. Without, again, needing a vote, you can increase a vehicle license fee with a vote for above that.
And, I mean, just ballparking, that would bring in around $250,000 to $300,000 or something like that? I don't expect it.
Christy, what do we currently collect? I feel like it's like we collect about 1.5 on 40. So if we raised it another 10, yeah, it'd be like 200,000, if I'm doing rough ballpark math right.
I see some nods, so. Okay. Yeah, certainly anything we can do. I mean, I know those inflationary costs are really, on road maintenance are high, mm-hmm. and making it, when we approved the funding for our sidewalk bond project, I mean, we thought we'd get so many feet of sidewalk, and I wouldn't know it's gonna be tough to get to what we asked the voters for. So anything that we can do to sort of help keep these projects going along, keep our streets free of potholes, I think is something that our voters, our residents would really like. The final question I have is around sort of fee updates. I know that our practice generally is to review all the fees and adjust by CPI. How does that work? But I noticed there's some fees that we haven't always done. Business licenses, we talked about the other week is one, but also just sort of thinking about other things that we do. The stipends for boards and commissioners, I mean, that's been flat for since we adopted that. What is our thoughts? What is the current staff thinking about sort of reviewing some of these fees or sort of stipends and other budgetary items that we don't really look at frequently? Is there a sort of a plan for reviewing these?
Most of them, like you said, are driven by CPI. If we do have ones that are significant drivers of the budget, we will absolutely take a look at those. And that's probably something that Christy and I can do and see if there's ones we can adjust in the future going forward. The nice thing about increasing by CPI is, you know, we don't have to come back to this body on a regular basis and try to justify the increases. But mm-hmm. That's something we can absolutely take a look at.
Yeah, and I just know that PCD, as well as Parks, Parks and Recreation, look at theirs on a periodic basis.
Right. Yeah. No, I just wanted to make sure that we're looking at everything. And I know we do get most of them, but again, when inflation is going up, but we keep some of our costs and our expenses lower, or we're not collecting at the rate of inflation, it does leave, even though there's very relatively small budgetary impacts, it'd be nice to sort of know that we, at least every 5 years or something, we're reviewing everything.
Sure.
I'll just note that, I mean, we do have, we've been looking at this for a while, but we do have some potential council amendments that I think there's lots of merit in these, and I believe that we'll be discussing them in more detail on the 17th, but if there's anything that anyone would like to talk about now, I mean, or express support for, I mean, this is an opportunity to do that. I see quiet. Okay. Yeah, Councilor Adamasu.
Oh, could you put the slide up again? So I was kind of late putting my amendment in. I've been having meetings with Habitat for Humanity over the last 2 years. I'd like to see a public-private partnership for low-income home buyers. An example of middle housing that would be transparent for future developers, potentially. It could also give council and staff, with us having, so to speak, skin in the game with some money to buy land, go through the whole process of middle housing, developing, et cetera, with an experienced private entity, nonprofit-like Habitat for Humanity, a land trust, something like that. Someone experienced that would take the project over. It could benefit not only the home buyers of today, but their generations after them. So even though the start could be a small project, it could be a vision for others to mimic. And I think it would give staff and council some more input into potential changes to building code, to zoning, to permitting processes, everything from A to Z that we will actually be part of and seeing transparently, us going through it rather than being on the other side of the table. I think it could give us some really good input into potential revisions that are needed in code. So just wanted to give a little background on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor Mark.
At our last meeting, we spent some time talking about social services and the need for utility support and rent support and how we didn't have the money to be able to do that. And I think many of us have the view that having a amendment which would allow the city to provide some funding to help that would be a good move. In addition, we have received some communication regarding an idea associated with cards, food cards, holiday food cards like we used to have in COVID, to provide some funding that would also help the neediest amongst us. We heard a very moving story when this last one for people who were really stuck. And so I would like to make a potential council amendment of $100,000 for the utility and rent support that we discussed last time. And I believe that the idea was for $50,000 of the gift cards. And so I would also include that for discussion. But I think many of us feel that there is an opportunity for the city to do something here during these tough times. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Councilmember Scully.
I would just encourage those who don't have a written amendment in to get it in. I mean, I want to see the list more than anything else. And we've got that $60 million number. I want to see the $60 million up there. And I want to be aware all these things are good ideas, but we do go to Kid in a Candy Store and we're going to regret it next year. And so I just want us to be able to evaluate those in the context of everything else. So if you've made a proposal, I encourage you to put it in writing and let's get it on the chart.
Yeah, as we have on this slide here, for potential council amendments to be included on the 17th in the staff report, we need those by the end of the day on Wednesday, the 5th. That's this coming Wednesday. That way we can incorporate those in the staff report and you'll be able to see them all together. So that if you're able to do that, that'd be great.
And we have the ability to shoot from the hip, absolutely. But I will tell you that from years of experience, don't do it. it probably won't pass, and more than that, it's just really hard to figure it out if it's not in advance. So thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay. With that, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.